Parsha Vayera begins with the exemplary Chnosas Orchim of Avram Avinu, whereby even in his incapacitated state, so soon after the Mila, the age of 99, nonetheless, no sooner does he see these three wayfarers, he hastens to bring them in and to take care of them. And it is not because he considers them to be people of great stature. As we see, he's actually somewhat suspicious of them. For he says, Pasuk Dalet, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Dalet, Yukachnom Atmaim, take some water, Virachat Surag Lechem, wash your feet, Vishanu Tachas Ha'etz. Rashi explains the reason why he makes a point of telling them to wash their feet. Kasavur Shehem Arviyim. He thought that they were, well, Arabs of sorts. Shemishtachavim La'avak Raglehem. That they bow down to the dust on their feet. And as such, the dust of their feet would have the status of an object of Avodah Zarah, v'hikpid shelo lahachnes avodas kochavim lebeiso. And he's makbid not to have Avodah Zarah in his house. As it is, he put them under the tree. Even after the foot washing, they didn't make it into the house. But even under his tree, he doesn't want them with this dust on his feet. And it's a well-known Rashi, which means that it's not a symptom of their moral stature that he rushes to take care of them. Actually, he considers them to be people of rather suspect habits. And what's very interesting is, in a sense, the question is twofold. Personally, prior to this Rashi, and for that matter, post this Rashi, I don't think I've ever heard of the idea of bowing down to the dust of your feet. I'm not a maven, I'm not a mumcha in Avodah Zarah's, but as these things go, it seems to be highly unusual. We've heard of worshipping the stars and worshipping the sun and the moon. Dust, per se, doesn't seem to be really in the same category. Now, interestingly, the Maharal speaks about this in the Ugar Aryeh. And he says that in order to understand how dust could become the object of worship, we need to appreciate the background to Avodah Zarah at all. The Rambam explains that the basis of the original swerving towards Avodah Zarah was that people could actually not fully relate to the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was interested in any form of communication with them. He is the ultimate infinite being. Mankind is finite. And therefore, they reached the conclusion, erroneous though it was, but this is the origins of Avodah Zarah, that the more likely way of being answered or recognized is by lower spiritual powers. And thus began Avodas Kochavim Umazolos. Not everybody thinks that the boss will be interested in speaking to them. Their floor manager, they may have more of a chance with them. Says Maharal, so what's most interesting is if we take this, again, misguided conception, but take it to its conclusion, we'll appreciate that the force that humankind has the most chance of connecting with or being related to is the lowest of the spiritual forces. Because if the entire inception of Avodah Zarah is God is so high up there and we're so low down here, he's not going to be interested, so you're more likely, quote-unquote, to catch the attention of the lower spiritual forces. The closer to you they are, the more they'll relate to you. And there is nothing lower than dust. And thus, it becomes the most likely candidate for Avodah Zarah. That's interesting. That's what happens when you take a bad svara and draw it to its logical conclusions. Maharal. Interestingly, however, the Shaloh HaKadosh has a different approach, because it's also worthwhile noting that not only can will we need to explain the existence of dust worship, not only can such a thing exist, but Avram strongly suspects that these three people are of the dust persuasion. In other words, even if you can somehow explain it, but as we mentioned before, we don't hear from it often. It's not in the one of the commonly mentioned Avodah Zarah. So therefore, even if it exists, but why is Avram so sure that these people subscribe to it? That's a good Shaila. He takes one look at them. I mean, they have dust on their feet because they've been walking. He takes one look at them, and he pegs them for dust worshippers. Why? Says the Shaloh, the way to explain Avram's analysis of the situation will be to bring back the question, to worship of dust. Dust is the antithesis of worship. It is the emblem of worthlessness. How then can one come to worship dust? Says the Shaloh, the worship of dust can be understood when we appreciate that it is not worship for itself, but actually as a symptom, as evidence of a power that was worshipped at that time, namely the sun. Because the power of the sun is represented by dust, in that it beats down on things and dries them out and ultimately can reduce them to dust. Therefore, if a person subscribes to the Avodas Kochavim of sun worship, which was prevalent, then he may actually look upon dust reverentially. Because look what the sun did to this. And he begins to accord it elevated status. And thus, when we say that Avram was suspicious that they were dust worshippers, really that means that he was suspicious that they were a specific branch of sun worshippers. And now, should we ask the question, which still remains, what is it that makes you think that this is the case, says the Shaloh, look in Rashi. Or look at the Pasuk and look in Rashi. What is the weather on this day? For Yoshev Pesach Oel Kechom Hayom. Kechom Hayom means this is a day that is so unusually hot, it is made hot enough that no one in their right mind would ever leave their house. And here you have three men. Now, they're angels, which means that they're weatherproof, and they're there in order to give Avram Avinu the Nachas Ruach for Achnasos Orchim. We know that. Avram doesn't know their Malachim. If he did, it wouldn't count. And therefore, he considers them to be mere mortals. What type of person, discounting the two classic examples, would ever go out in the midday heat, Kechom Hayom? There's only one solution, and that is they're sun worshippers. Everybody else, stay at home. But if you worship the sun, rejoice. There's never been a day that the sun shone like this before. And therefore, if three people are outdoors on a day like this, sun worship and sun worship equals dust worship equals please wash your feet and then have a seat by the tree. So this is the analysis of the Shaloh. Fascinating, really. Al derech hapshat. Now, there is a pasuk within this Hachnosas Orchim that we need to look at very carefully. It's pasuk Gimel. And for reasons that will become apparent, the only way to read this pasuk is to read the entirety of the pasuk. Halachically, that is. And here it is. He runs towards them. Vayomar, Adonai, imna matzasi chen be'einecha, alna ta'avor me'alavdecha. The reason why we must read the pasuk as a whole is for the benefit of the second word, aleph, dalet, nun, yud, because it's difficult to know how to read it by itself. For as we will see in Rashi, there exists a machlokas amongst Chazal as to whether this is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we know that word will be used for that, and we use it that way, or could it be, very simply, the plural of the word Adoni? Every word has a plural. Bini becomes Banai, Yadi becomes Yadai, and therefore Adoni, if you're speaking to many, would also end up this way, in which case he is actually referring to the three men in front of him, and it's not a shame kodesh. And therefore, it's difficult to know whether to translate the word, or to read it, Vayomar Hashem. Well, that would be true if it's a Shem Kodesh, but it could be that it isn't, in which case it's incorrect. And Rashi proceeds to explain to us a little bit what it is that would move us to conclude that it's either Shem Kodesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the Malachim. On the one hand, and there is no straightforward explanation here, for the following reason. On the one hand, to say that it is the plural of Adoni is problematic, because the very next words are Imna matzasi chein be'einecha, anotavo me'alavdecha. If he is referring to them in the plural, if it's the plural of Adoni, so he's talking to Rabbim, and therefore she should say, my masters, Imna matzasi chein be'einechem, anata avru me'alavdechem. Now he goes on to use the plural in Pasuk Dalet, yukach nambat maim, rachat surag lechem, to wash your feet, because he is talking to them for sure. But the shift from the singular to the plural seems to indicate that Pasuk Gimel is addressed to a singular entity. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that really is the main thrust of why we'd be inclined to look at this as a Shem Kodesh. It's a singular. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a singular. However, what does it mean if he is talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, Rashi tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has come to Levaker Esachola, to visit the sick. Avram Avinu is in the middle of that communion. He sees these three guests, and he actually wishes to break from his meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take care of the guests. Before doing so, he says, please, right? If what I'm doing is pleasing before you, don't go away, because I will be back. But I want to take care of this guest. I have the opportunity for a mitzvah. Gedola achnosas orchim yosemi kabolas b'nei hashchina. And that will explain these words as addressed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Imna matzasi chen beinecha, alna ta'avor me'alavdecha, please don't leave. I am taking care of the guest. I'll be back presently. That sounds perfect. It explains the use of the singular. It explains everything except for one thing. The location of these words. Because this is Pasuk Gimel, and the Pasuk Beis has already had him running towards the guests. Which means if it's read in a linear way, the end of Pasuk Beis, Vayaratz likrosam mipesachol vayishtachu aratzo, he's already started to deal with the guests. And then, back over his shoulder, please don't go away. Rashi explains, if we are to understand that he's talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pasuk Gimel must be understood as having been said before he ran away, which is an example of the concept of a muktam u'mu'ucha ba'Torah. Not everything is written chronologically in the Torah. Now, we've met that before, and we'll meet it again. But here it's a big chiddush. Because normally when we say a muktam u'mu'ucha ba'Torah, it could be that a section that was written later happened earlier. Here we're saying a pasuk that happened, that's written later, actually occurred in between two halves of an earlier pasuk. That is a very extreme application of emuktu mukha batorah, because the first part of pasuk beis, then pasuk gimel, and then the second part of pasuk beis. That's quite extreme. So there's a lot to say about this pasuk, this pasuk gimel. But there's one more thing to say for us, namely, let us go back to the understanding that it is the plural of Adoni. Okay, Adoni means master, that's how you address. Even Lahavdil in modern Hebrew, people tend to call you Adoni, but generally not before they're about to say something particularly pleasant. But in principle, Adoni means master, and the plural would be, this word in front of us. There's one question outstanding. The plural, and it's safe for me because I'm Ashkenazi, you'll understand what I mean in a second. The plural of Adoni is Adonai, with a patach. Just like Bini is Banai, and Yadi is Yadai. And in fact, this we find in the beginning of Pasuk Perek Yudtes, Pasuk Beis, when the two Malachim, again, the two Malachim come to Sodom, and Lot addresses them. And again, the pasuk reads by Yomer, Hinei na Adonai. please, my masters, Suruna, come to my house. So you see, and it's true always, that if the word is meant to be the plural of Adoni, it should be Adonai with a patach, not noi with a comma. It's the only time this word ever gets the nun, has the commas underneath, is when it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here there's a commas, in which case there should be no discussion. How is it possible to explain or to finance the understanding that this is the plural of Adoni if it has a commas? Should have had a patach. It should break down as simple as that. But nonetheless, there are those who maintain it's the plural. How can it be? If it's the plural, once again, why is there a commas and not a patach? Says the Shalom HaKadosh. If we say that this is Hashem Chol, it's the plural, my masters. So let's just follow the psukim, because we'll see there are fluctuations. Pasuk Gimel, if he's talking to them in the plural, so the first question is, well then why does he speak in the singular? Im na matasi chen be'einecha, anata avor me'alav decha. And Rashi deals with this. And Rashi says, as much as he's talking to them, but he understands that one of them, presumably the one in the middle, is the senior one. He is the one that will make the decisions for them. And therefore, he addresses him specifically, as even though there will be consequences for everyone else. Because if he stops, all three will stop. So it's valid he addresses all of them, but then focuses on one of them. But he does not always or exclusively focus on one of them. Pasuk Hey, pardon me, Pasuk Dalad, Yukachnam Admaim, as we mentioned before, Verachatsu Ragleichem, in the plural, which means that he is addressing all of them, for sure. And what that means is, if we understand that this is a reference to the Malachim, then to his three guests, then the full answer must be that he is talking at the same time to all of them and to one of them. That is to say, that generally he's referring to all of them, but specifically he has his eye on one of them who will make the decisions for all of them. And that's borne out by the fact that the pasuk will fluctuate from the singular to the plural. If it's the decision making, it's the singular. If it's what will happen with them, it's the plural. Now, what's very interesting is the Bali Haloshon explain that a komatz is a very unusual vowel shape, because every other type of vowel shape is either a dot or a line. It's either a number of dots, it could be your Shava or your Tseire or your Segel, 1, 2, 3, but there'll be dots or the patach will be a line. The komatz is the only one which is neither a straight line nor a dot. But actually, say the Baal HaLoshon, the komatz is both. The leg of the komatz is actually the dot, and then what's on top is the line of the patach. Interestingly, we're not going to develop this too much, but just to mention a fascinating application of this. We're familiar in general with the concept of gematrias, whereby each letter has a numerical value, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, 1, 2, 3. Now, there are many schools of gematrias and many different applications of gematrias. And in one application, not only are the letters rated for their numerical value, but even the nikud, even the vowels. And the question is, what's the gematria of a vowel? What's the gematria of a tseire? So, but the answer is, every dot is treated as a yud, because the yud is the dot. Every patach, every line, is treated like a vav. And therefore, now that we're asking, the gematria of patach in this system is 6. Patach adds a 6. And the gematria of the chirik, the 1 dot, will be 10. And seire, the 2 dots, will be 20. And segel, the 3 dots, will be 30. So now, let's ask the Shaila, what's the gematria of a komatz? And I won't say the halacha is, but the answer is 16. In this system, a komatz is 16, which in a sense bears out in a very fascinating illustration of what we just said. The komatz is a chirik and a patach, put together. Now, the question is, how does that help us here? And the answer is absolutely Fascinating. It says the Shalah, with this word in the beginning of Pasuk Gimel, he is addressing his audience. Now the question is, who is his audience? Is he talking to all of them or just one of them? And the answer is yes. He is talking both to all of them generally and to one of them specifically. Now if you're talking to all of them, he would address them with the plural of Adoni is Adonai. If he was talking only to one of them, he would say Adoni. And now what happens when he is talking both to one of them and to all of them? It is both a patach and a chirik. A patach and a chirik is a komatz. That's why this word has a komatz underneath. And it is the only time you will ever find addressing people, or those that are rated as people, with a komatz underneath. Because this is how, if we just appreciate for a moment, how compactly the Torah has communicated to us that he is speaking concurrently to a group and to one person specifically, it all came through the alignment of a chirik and a patach to make up a komatz. That's the stage direction, that's all you need. And everything else flows from there. So this is the parshanut of the Shalah HaKadosh. So that's a word or two in the beginning of the parsha. And I would like to move from there to talk a little bit about Sodom. This episode with Sodom really dominates the middle of the parsha, no question. And we need to talk about it. Not only to understand Parshas Vayera, but for another reason. When Moshe Rabbeinu, in Parshas Nitzavim, when he talks to the Jewish people as they're just about to go into Eretz Canaan, and that everybody knows what happened to Sodom and Amorah, Moshe warns them that things could reach a state where Sodom and Amorah could be repeated. He refers to Sodom and Amorah in his words. Kema pechas Sodom v'Amorah ad mo'zfar ma'asher afach Hashem ba'apo v'chamaso. And therefore, whatever happened in Sodom, we need to know about it, not only to appreciate Parshas Vayera, but to know what to avoid. Because Moshe Rabbeinu spoke about it as something that could come back. We don't imagine something like Sodom and Gomorrah could ever come back. What was it that really characterized the unique level of descent of Sodom and Gomorrah? We know they did terrible things. There's different depictions and different descriptions of the things that they did, really terrible acts of cruelty. But there is something else that the Mefarshim point out. Namely, as we will see, and this in a sense sealed the fate of Sodom, all of their wrongdoing was codified. It was legalized. It actually became legislation. They reached a point where in order to protect their assets, which is where it all came from, it was a bountiful place, Al-Derech HaPshat, what drew Lot to there. In order to protect it, it became illegal to give charity. And in a sense, once that happens, so the way back becomes very remote, becomes very unlikely. And the reason why is because if a person does something wrong, and people do things that are wrong, people make mistakes, they have moments of weakness or bad judgment, but as long as there remains a higher faculty that has a clear vision of how a person should be, there is always the possibility, optimistic likelihood, that it will bring them back. If all of those higher faculties then become enlisted in the service of protecting the sin and legitimizing it and codifying it, then what's left? What's left to bring you back? Your better judgment is also part of it. There's nothing left. There's the only thing worse than an Aveira is an Aveira that becomes legislation. Because then all of the legal forces that one would hope to appeal to them in order for a reversal, they're also in on it. One of the kings. Because we have Sodom, Amora, Admo, Tzvoim, and each one has his name. We met them last week. And they are mentioned in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Beis. That's the four kings and the five kings. So these are within the five. So some of them we know. We know Bera and Birsha. I mean, these are terrible names. Bera means with evil. And Birsha with wickedness. I mean, that's their name. That's the name the Torah gives them. And who else is there? Shinav. Shinav meaning he hated his father in heaven. Shinav. And then we have Shem-Aver. Shem-Aver Melech Tzavoyim. The last king, by the way, has no name. In other words, if we read the Pasuk, you have Bera Melech Sodom, Birsha Melech Amora, Shinav Melech Admo, Shem-Aver Melech Tzavoyim, U-Melech Bela, and the king of Bela, which is Tzoar. Doesn't have a name. What happened to him? Apparently it's not important. Well, the other names are very important. This is the Masi Hashem, which you quoted in the past, but it's such a wonderful Ha'ara. This is confirmation of what Chazal said, that the final city of Tzoar was built later, and therefore had not amassed a level of wrongdoing that registered. That's why it was able to be salvaged ultimately. Tzoar was saved. And so that means that of the five, it's the most junior of the five. And that's represented by the fact that its king has no name. Because any name here is a title of ignominy, of infamy. And as surely as the city hadn't reached that level, the king hadn't reached the level representing the city, that he would get a name like Bera or Birsha. They weren't their real names anyway. That's how the Torah characterizes them. So let's come back to Shem-Aver. What does Shem-Aver mean? Rashi says, some Aver, la'uf, he would attach a wing, Aver, be'evrato, right? Aver with an aleph is a wing. La'uf v'likbots, to fly up, v'limrod v'akodesh baruch, and to rebel against Hashem. That's what Rashi says, for all from the Medrash, Bereshis Rabbah. So what we see here is that that's what Shem-Aver means. Some Aver, La'uf, he would attach a wing to fly up and rebel against Hashem. So it's interesting. If we don't have time, we go through the Rashi and everyone checks out, and the moral of the story is they were all bad people. But if we just stop and take a look at these four names, we'll notice that the fourth one is very distinctive. It's actually very, you know, poetic, even. The first three are basically get to the point. He's bad, evil, hates his father in heaven. And number four, it has this lyrical quality to it. You would attach your wing to soar up and rebel against God. I mean, where is that coming from? What does that mean? Now is not the time to wax poetic. They're all about to be destroyed. Rav Ze'ev Freund, the Rav in one of the big Talmidei Chachamim in Beit Vegan, says something very interesting. Now, the wing, what does a wing represent? Angels have wings, that's how they're characterized in the Chumash. Now, angels are not physical beings, so when you say that they have a wing, what you mean is that it is their nature to soar as high as they can, to attach themselves to the highest possible source, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's called flying. For that they need wings. Human beings also have wings, in the sense that a human being also has a sense of aspiration. He has a sense of trying to attach himself to something higher. Those are his wings. In Kedusha, when we rise three times, Kadosh, 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 that's to give even a momentary expression, that's what says the Torah, to the aspect within us that is looking to go as high as we can. That higher faculty, generally, in a normal human being, even a human being who makes mistakes, that higher faculty is what should ultimately keep him under control or to bring him back. And here we have the ultimate expression of the evil of the leaders of these four cities, is that even his wing, which can take him higher, the higher he goes, the closer he can come to rebelling against God. That is to say, that his higher faculties, his wings themselves, became tools of rebellion. So then what's left? Nothing's left. It became an ideology and an enshrinement of selfishness and of cruelty. And what's interesting is that Avnei Nezer, I saw this week in his drushes, the Rebbe Avraham of Sokotchev, the Avnei Nezer. So we note that the cities of Sodom were destroyed and overturned. And that becomes really part of how it's described. Kima'apechas, so it was a ma'apecha. Not only destroyed, by that time everyone was dead, but the city was then overturned. And Avnei Nezer says the overturning of the city is a lesson for everyone else. Their very land upon which they lived was overturned because everything that should have brought them back was overturned. They reversed everything. They used what should have been forces for good to make things only even worse. The legal system, a moral code, were all enlisted in the service of evil. Everything that you would think would take them one way took them the other way. So life in Sodom was one big hafecha. Everything was upside down. And in the end, the place itself was destroyed through a mapecha. And what's interesting is, fascinating how the Malbim brings this out through reading carefully the psukim. See, in Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Dalet, which is when the Malachim are in Sodom, and they're in Lot's house. Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Dalet. What does it say? Terem Yishkavu. Before they were able to lie down, go to sleep, Va'anshei Ha'ir, Anshei Sodom Nosavu Alabais. The people of the city, the people of Sodom, gathered around the house, Minar Batzaken Kola Amikatzer, the entire population. And the Malbim asked a simple question. But we see the elegance of the Parshanut. Just read from the beginning. Terem Yishkavu, before they were able to lie down. Va'anshei Ha'ir, and the people of the city. Who are the people of the city? They're the people of Sodom. They're in Sodom. That's Pasuk Aleph. Vayavo Shnei Amalachim Sodom. So they're in Sodom. If you're in Sodom, the people of the city are the people of Sodom. So why does the Pasuk go on to say Va'anshei Ha'ir, Anshei Sodom? It couldn't possibly be anyone else, given where they are. That's a good shaila. So what's the answer? The answer is, says Malbim, we know that Anshei Ha'ir referred to the city of Sodom. But the reason why the Torah goes back and calls them Anshei Sodom is for us to understand that the reason why they congregated outside the house was as Anshei Sodom. In other words, this was a response to their identity. We are Anshei Sodom. We know who they are as people. But the question was, someone is boarding guests. It's an outrage. Are we people of Sodom or are we not? It was a call to their code. As Anshei Sodom, if you could imagine the rallying speeches, as Anshei Sodom, we cannot allow this to happen. So it was a matter of principle. Always be careful of people with principles. It was a matter of principle. And what happens, moreover, when Lot tries to reason with them, so then Lot gets in the way. The biggest outrage is that Lot tried to defend the people. Because essentially what Lot is looking to do is to argue that these people shouldn't be harmed. So he's debating morals with them. He's questioning their system, and he's the shofet. Right, he's the shofar by that sits below Yoshev, Yashar Sodom. And that for them was worth, if you can just begin to get an inkling of how twisted things have become. What hurt them the most is that someone was debating their moral code, because now he has no values. That was the most moral outrage. Ha'ish balachur balagur vayishpot shafot. Ha'echad balagur vayishpot shafot. Now he's judging us? That's even worse. They said if he'd been kind to his... This is what the sentence would sound like. Had he just been kind to his guests and admit that he was doing the wrong thing, that would be one thing. But he's arguing legislation with us? Then he became the target. At that point, he had to be pulled in by his guests for his own protection. And moreover, there is another aspect here that had never occurred to me, but that it explains to us a great deal. In Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Kaf Aleph, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is discussing, so to speak, the fate of Sodom with Avram Avinu, he says as follows. Very difficult pasuk to translate. Of course, not only from the beginning, I will go down, so to speak, and see. Is it really as bad as that? As bad as all the outcry that is coming towards me? Asu, kala. Now Rashi explains what that means is, if it's as bad as all that, they've done all those things, and they still persist in doing all those things, kala, from Bayechulu, they'll be finished. That's the end of them. V'imlo, but if it's not that bad, meaning if they're prepared to back down, if they're prepared to do tshuva, v'imlo, if they don't stand by that, eido'o, then I'll know what to do with them, meaning I'll do something else, that I'm not going to destroy them. Everything Rashi said is from Unkelus. Unkelus says, ebed imahon gemira, I will finish them. V'im taivin, but if they do tshuva, lo espara, then I will not destroy them. The Rashi source is Unkelus. Now that's a chiddush, by the way, that tshuva could have helped them at that stage. Maybe it's not a chiddush. Maybe tshuva can always help. Okay. But the big question, so we know the Rashi. So now the burning question is, are they going to do tshuva or not? If they do, they might not get off scot-free, but they won't be destroyed. If they don't, they'll be destroyed. That's what is yet to be determined. And the question is, why on earth will they do tshuva? What is today? Well, it happened to have been Pesach. No one in Sodom cares. Meaning, what is it that is about today that will make them do tshuva? They've been around for decades. They haven't done tshuva. This is their last chance. If they don't do tshuva by this time tomorrow, they'll be destroyed. So it's very nice to know that if only they would do tshuva, but why on earth would they do tshuva? What will happen that will make them do tshuva? They're not aware that this conversation is happening with Kadosh Baruch Hu and Avram Avinu. As far as they're concerned, it's just another day. Just another day means just another day of Sodom acting as Sodom. So it almost sounds like they don't have a chance to do tshuva, if one could even phrase it that way. What's that? Why should they do tshuva? The answer is, and must be, that is why the two malachim are sent to Sodom. The entry of the two malachim into Sodom and the way that the people of Sodom relate to them is their last chance to do tshuva. But still we must say more. Because if that's true, then they have to realize that these two people are not here like everybody else is here. Because everyone else who came their way, they just destroyed them. And if there's just another two people to act that way, so there is nothing different about today than any other day. It must be that they will be given to understand from these two people somehow that if they don't get their act together, they'll be destroyed. Now the question is, how will that come out? So amazingly, I don't know if everyone explains this way, but there is a Chizkuni, one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Chizkiya ben Manoach, and when Lot first sees them, let's have a look at the beginning of Perek Yutes. When Lot first sees these two Malachim, and it's also important to note, worthwhile noting, in the beginning of the Parsha they're called Anoshim, and here they're already called Malachim. Vayavoshnei Malachim Sodom Leizerev Ba'erev, and that possibly even indicates on a pshat level that by this stage they are recognizable as Malachim, not as your normal people. Avram thought they were normal people. They're called Anoshim. He thinks that they're Noch Arabs who worship the dust, but they're called Malachim here, not Anoshim. Now Lot, in Pasuk Beis, he asks them to his house, and they say no. Vayomulo, they say no. Ki barachov nalin. We'll sleep in the street. Or we'll spend the night in the street. We know the story. But the question is, why did they say no? It's very nice. Lot is inviting them. Very nice. And they say no. Until he pressures them in the Pasuk Gimel. But so far, no. We'll sleep in the street. What do you want to sleep in the street for? What do you want to spend the night in the street for? Says the Chizkuni, because that's what they're here for. They're here in Sodom to be seen. The words of the Chizkuni, Ki barachov nalin, we're going to spend the night in the street, Kedei sheyiru osanu anshei ha'ir. People should see us. Shelahof chabanu, that we have come to destroy the city. Ulai yashuvu. Maybe they'll do tshuva. These two malachim are in the city like Yonah was in Nineveh. They come with a message. So Lot is looking to kind of move them to the side a little bit, you know, to his house and to contain things a little bit. They don't want to be contained. The people of the city should hear. Because this is their last chance. If they don't hear from us, they won't have a chance. This time, tomorrow morning, they'll be destroyed unless they do tshuva. It's our job to tell them. We don't want to be taken out of circulation. We want to be in the town square. So says the Chizkuni. Amazing. They're not just being demure. Rechav Nalim, we'll stay in their street. We want to be seen. Now, if that's true, so then we need to understand, so why is Lot so insistent that they should come to his house? In other words, they just said we want to let people know in order to save the city. So then how can you respond to that by saying, no, come home with me? He doesn't want the city to be saved? So I think based on the Chizkuni, one would have to say that Lot feels that people of Sodom, they may not rise to the occasion. They may not respond to such a call for tshuva. So he's looking, in a sense, for a milder way for the people of Sodom to register that they're prepared to change their ways. Namely, instead of you just standing here saying do tshuva, which might not bring out the best in them, come to my house. And what's interesting is, and Rashi tells us, Lot Yoshev Bishar Sodom, that means, on that day, he was appointed as the shofet. I'm an authority figure here in Sodom. Which means that instead of, he's pleading for a lower level, a lower threshold of tshuva for the people of Sodom. Instead of demanding that they all repent, at least let it be passive. At least let them see that I'm their leader, and maybe I represent now a change in policy for them. And I'm being machnes orchim, and they will at least register b'sheva al taseh, passively, a change of heart from recent patterns by not taking any action. And I think, and Rashi's comment, Oso hayom minuhu shofet alem, on that day he became the shofet. So I think Lot here is looking to see a kind of a hashgacha within. In other words, he's been living there forever long, no one took any notice. All of a sudden, just today, I mean, there's a lot of just todays. This is the last day of Sodom. And it is the first day that he's become the shofet. So as Lot, he puts two and two together. Maybe it's not for nothing that I became the shofet. Maybe I needed to become the shofet today in order to save Sodom in this way. Because if I'm the shofet, I can send a message to them and help them in that way. And I think, by the way, there may be many ways to translate these words, but have a look at Pasuk, the beginning of Pasuk Beis. Vayomer, he says, Hine no Adonai, we can say it once again safely, that's, you know, my masters. Now the words that are interesting are the words that we would be most likely to gloss over. Hine no. Because Avram just basically said Vayomar Hashem or whatever. There was no Hine no. So, and what does Hine no mean? Hine no means here now. That's pretty much it. And what does that mean? So I think perhaps this is Lot saying to the Malachim, here we are. Look at me. Look at you. It all happened just now. You just came. I just became the shofet. What does this all mean? Maybe that means you should come to my house. Hine na, but it takes process the circumstances as they have been. What do you think this whole situation means? Here we are. Now they said no originally, but Lot presses. And if that's true, by the way, then I'm not sure. This is because the pasuk doesn't say openly. I'm not sure that every effort was made in order to hide the fact that there were guests in Lot's house. Because if you hide it, then it's self-defeating. Because everybody will end up doing tshuva without ever knowing about it. Because no one knew there were guests. So it could be that there was no effort made in order that people shouldn't know. Maybe word did get out and it should go out. And how will people do tshuva? The easiest way that they could possibly do tshuva: go to sleep. The shofet of the town has two guests in his, and this is all that's demanded of you. It's the first step, and it will save your lives. Go to sleep. Let them go to sleep, and you go to sleep. Tshuva will never be easier than that. And they all got up. And I think that this gives new meaning also to Pasuk Ches. By the way, if that's true, I don't know if it changes fundamentally, but when Lot starts bargaining with him and he puts his daughters into the bargain, that very difficult pasuk, he's not only bargaining for his guests, he is bargaining for the existence of the entire city. Doesn't make it the right decision, but the stakes are much, much higher. He's saying to the people of Sodom, if you antagonize these people, we're all finished. So what difference will it make anymore? Now he says to them, pasuk yutes, perik yutes pasuk, Ches, right? That's when he says, it's terrible, right? Terrible to hear. But his daughters will be, they'll all be finished if you carry on with this. Now he says at the end of Pasuk Ches, Rak lo anashim ha'el al tasu davar ki al kein ba'u b'tzel karosi. So we should note that he refers to them as ha'anashim ha'el, not ha'anashim ha'ele. And the Medrash talks about it, because the word ale actually means strong. Eile ha'aretz. And in fact, at this point, which is interesting, because Lot is telling these people how strong telling the people of Sodom how strong his guests are. So of course the question is, well, if they're so strong, then how come you close the door behind you to defend them? But the point is, they're strong enough to destroy the city if we make the wrong decision. That's why I'm pleading with you. And then the final words of Pasuk Ches, which are always difficult to translate, ki alkein ba'u b'tzel karasi. Those words, ki alkein ba'u, very difficult to translate. Normally, I mean, Rashi talks about it, normally we would say on account of the fact that it's almost backwards in the sense that he's saying, please don't harm them, after all, they are my guests. But alkein doesn't mean after all. Alkein means for this. That's what Arkane means. And if our understanding based on the Kiskuni is correct, at this point Lot, and these are actually Lot's final words to the people of Sodom, he'll never speak to them again. But his final words are, don't harm these people. Because if you persist in carrying out the legislation of Sodom, the time-honored code of Sodom, of being cruel to its guests, these guests will be the last guests you're ever cruel to. Ki al kain ba'u b'tzel karasi, because this is why they came to my house. Al kain, therefore. This is what they're doing in my house. They're in my house in order to see how you react. So if you persist in your reaction, it will be the worst mistake you could possibly make. That's why they're here. And what's the response? Pasuk Tes, get out the way. Gesh hala. He became the shofet, and now he's trying to change the legislation. And once again, it was a matter of principle. Even to their destruction, they couldn't part ways. And that is the ultimate irony, the ultimate tragedy, really, of Sodom, is that it started out with just pure selfishness. They had very lavish assets, very vast resources, and they wanted to protect them. So protect them, they were selfish, but it's not nice to be selfish. So they made a creed out of selfishness. And the creed became so embedded in their moral essence that even as it led to their own destruction, they couldn't let go of their laws that were originally meant to to look out for their best interests, ultimately trapped them. And they went down with them. So this, I think, is a very important analysis of Sodom. And what's interesting is, after all this, and by the way, the reversal of values and the moral investment in any value, whether it's on the opposite of what is actually moral, that's all around. And it's very difficult to combat. And there's a fascinating Medrash commenting on the Pasuk in Tehillim. It's from the Shir HaMalos that we used to say Shabbos afternoon, 15 Shir HaMalos. Matsasi es David Abdi.
Why did we use it when you don't say it now? I don't think you say it.
Don't know.
Different
words, but. Matsasi es David Abdi. You remember when Shabbos used to go out 10 at night? Yeah. Matsasi, well, that's in the summer. Okay. Says the Medrash. So that's at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, I found David. I found the Matsasi es David Abdi, b'shem kashim el shechtim. Says the Medrash to Tehillim. You found David? Where'd you find him? Heichon Matsasi, where did I find him? Bis Sodom. I found him in Sodom. That's what the Medrash says. What is the meaning of this? As we know, ultimately, chronologically, David actually came from Sodom, in part. That's one of the reasons why Lot was saved. Because Lot is carrying within him at that stage Moab. From Moab comes Rus, and from Rus comes David. So it's true biologically and chronologically that he came from Sodom, but the Medrash is clearly saying more than that, because he was found in Sodom. As we have seen, what characterizes Sodom more than anything else is not just selfishness. People are selfish, not just greed, not just that they're full of desire and all of these things. People are like that sometimes. But actually, what really brings them into their own is that they're prepared to take all of that and make a creed out of it. That's something that, at least in those days, was unique to Sodom. It's a kind of a brazenness. Not only am I going to do an Aveira, but I'm going to turn it into a mitzvah. And what went on in Sodom was unbelievable. The accounts that we have. And it was all in the name of, right, to have the gall to take an act of cruelty and to put the law behind it, that's a higher level altogether. Because in a sense, you are overturning everything that human intuition knows to be good. Interestingly, Lot has an affinity for that. Because Lot, when he sees something that he wants, he's prepared to say whatever he needs to say in order to get it. Where do we see that? We find that Lot, at a certain point, he had a lot of cattle, a lot of sheep and his flock, and they grazed wherever they wanted. Yeah, that was the point of contention between him and Roe Avram. He has to explain himself. He has to justify himself. Gezel, I mean, in principle, he can't steal. That's Lot. Does he not subscribe to the prohibition against stealing? Says Lot, I'm not stealing. The reason why is because this produce is mine. How do you figure? Well, Avram has been promised the land. But he has no children. So that means I will inherit him. Which means it's just a matter of time before this entire land is mine. So I'm taking an advance. That's it. Makes perfect sense now. When you look at it that way, it makes perfect sense. The truth of the matter is, upon closer analysis, it doesn't make any sense at all. And the reason why is because Lot's position is impossible. It is an impossible position. It's a contradiction in terms. On the one hand, he's prepared to take the land. Why? God gave it to Avram. Now, the same God that gave the land to Avram told Avram he would have a son. So what do you say about that? So what's Lot's response? Well, I mean, he doesn't have a son. But God said he would. Yeah, well, so he's prepared to ignore that. But then who says the land is yours? God says the land is mine. You cannot take God's words and cut them in half unless it suits you. In other words, I'll take the bit about Canaan belong to Avram because God has spoken. But the bit about Avram having a child, well, obviously that's not going to happen. So, and put it all together equals the land belongs to Lot. That's unbelievable. He could found the law faculty. And in a sense, this is an affinity. It's affinity for the Sodom way of thinking. And therefore he's drawn to them and they appreciate him. Because he's got a Yiddish kop, and in time he becomes their judge. They see a real talent in Lot. I mean, if you can say that, you really, you know, you have a great future ahead of you. All four cities lasted one day under his tenure, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. And what comes out from Lot is Moab. And Moab, in a sense, is a propagation of this chutzpah, the very name of Moab, which makes no effort to hide. Even Ammon somehow tried to be a little bit modest. Moab, from the father. That's what his daughter calls his son. And we can only imagine what the drasha at the bar mitzvah sounded like. And this is the power of Moab that is being developed. It was finally honed in Sodom. By the time Sodom was destroyed, Lot was there. And that now becomes the force of Moab. And Moab becomes a symbol of brazenness and will never turn back. Amazingly, that very koach is what is necessary for the future of the redemption of the Jewish people. And it begins with Rus. Because Rus actually, in her way, exhibits this midah as she makes her pivotal decision. Her decision to stay with Naomi, which makes no sense at all. All of her comforts should lead her back home to her well-to-do upbringing. She has no prospects with Naomi. Naomi herself is telling her to go away. I don't want you. Not only I don't want you to put yourself out for me. I'm not comfortable with you being with me. And Rus doesn't care. And at a certain point, Rus more or less tells Naomi to stop talking. Right? Stop trying to convince me. Not wherever you go, I'll go. That is the beginning of the redemption of this single-mindedness. Of this, in a sense, what you could call holy brazenness, azus de kedusha, whereby Rus says, everything that is reasonable is with you, and I don't care. Verus dov kobo. And that is the origins of the line of David HaMelech, and ultimately, Yemos HaMashiach. Because the truth of the matter is, when we consider the state of the world as it is, there is no question that when David HaMelech comes, when Mashiach ben David comes, there will be revolutions. There will be a certain way of relating to everything that the world thinks is important and what the world thinks is not important. And there will have to be a reinstating an order that will require every ounce of the Kedusha of Moab to stand firm and to reinstate what has now become the opposite of what everybody else knows to be true. The world has turned so far on its head that in order to turn it the right way up again, we're going to need another revolution. And that will happen through David HaMelech. And that's why the Medrash says, Matzasti es David Abdi. I found him in Sodom. Sodom is the greenhouse of the midah that ultimately will be necessary. And for us, important to realize, each one, we're all looking to do our bit to bring the world a little bit closer. Everyone, I'm sure, has their experiences where they need to be like Rus, where the world is upside down. But our alignment with the future of the world, as it will be, is like Rus to say, regardless of what the world says, regardless of the things that they have turned on their head in the name of reason and fairness and equality, etc., we are headed towards the world as it should be, with this midah of Matzasi Estovet Adiba Sodom. Leave it over there for you.